Welcome, everyone. Those of you watching from elsewhere, it's very, very cold here in Melbourne. It's midwinter and freezing. So the people who came out, I praise you all. So I always like to begin my talks by quoting my guru, Swami Muktananda, who always began his talks by saying in Hindi, Sabko bare sammane ke saath prem se hridayik swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would always say that's the essence of spirituality, to welcome another person. And these programs are, I always honor that group of people I call the great beings. These are the great yogis, the great realizers, the one who become self-realized or enlightened, who have understood something very profound, and they come in every tradition, from many, many different traditions, and they all express what they discovered in different ways. And yet, if you understand their language, and the way you understand their language by understanding the language of one of them, if you're going to understand one of them, you can understand all of them. If you try to understand all of them, you won't understand any of them. But if you learn the language of one of them, then you can hear the language of all of them. They're all speaking about the same thing, about knowing a higher truth, a truth that is hidden. You could say it's esoteric, and yet it's very real. And it exists within every person. On a superficial level, we know ourselves as a personality and as a series of neuroses and likes and dislikes. But deeper down, there's something else. And this is what these great beings talk about. And that's why I honor them so much, because at a certain stage in my life, I was very fed up with life and with my career and everything that was going on. And I, by a series of coincidences, I came in contact with this higher stream of knowledge. And it eventually sent me to India. And then I had the good fortune of meeting Swami Muktananda. And so we honor that place within us that Gurdjieff used to call the esoteric circle of mankind or something like that. Is that what he called it? It means that these great beings are the creme de la creme of humanity. And what they hold out for us is a beacon of hope and possibility for all of us, to raise us from mundane concerns and human suffering to some other state of consciousness. And speaking of Gurdjieff, I've got a quote here from Madame de Saltzman. Madame de Saltzman is one of his close students. You could say she's one of his successors. She later was the head of the Gurdjieff Society, so she was a teacher in her own right. And here's what she says. And the quotes that come from these beings are always filled with a certain kind of energy and a certain kind of light. And we hear them in different ways at different stages of our journey. So listen to this. She says, what is most important is the connection with higher energy. Now, of course, we call that higher energy Shakti, but it exists in every path called different things, but it's a higher energy. And when one is not related, one must stay in front of the lack of connection. What's she saying there? When one is not related, when one doesn't have that connection, what does that mean? One must stay in front of the lack of connection. What's that?
You feel the block very profoundly until you shift it.
Right. Hold the block, to be aware of it. Don't go into denial. If you're out of touch with that higher power, that should be your first concern. So know it. Make your A statement. I'm out of touch with that higher power. So it says, stay in front of the lack of connection. Then she says, stay in front of whatever is taking place. So be very present. Make your A statement. Be very present to whatever's going on. Stay in front of your connection or the lack of it. Stay in front. I think it's a wonderful quote. So be present to whatever is going on. When you're connected to the divine, know it. And when you're not connected to the divine, know it. And when you become aware of it and you're not, confess that, admit that to yourself, and then you can move into connection. It's a great quote by Madame de Saltzman. We would say it slightly differently. We say, as Bhagwan Nityananda said, bhavana rakho. Bhavana rakho is, again, if you understand the language of the saints, it's saying the same thing. Bhavana rakho is to stay in that state. Stay in that state of connectedness. If you lose it, go back to it. If you're in it, keep it. And I'm not talking about anything terribly esoteric. It really means stay in the clear space of good feeling. Be you at your best. Whenever anger comes in, whenever fear comes in, whenever self-hatred comes in, whenever jealousy comes in, it takes you away from that. Worry, fear, all these things take us away from it. So Bhagavan Nityananda said, stay in the state of integration, connectedness, and upliftment. You know that state. We move in and out of that state. So hold that state. When you're in it, hold it. When you're not in it, move back to it. And that's yoga, spirituality in a nutshell. It's to be in that state. And the great beings that I've been talking about are those who are established in that state. They have performed bhavana rakho. They're in front of that energy, that spiritual energy. They are connected to it. And that even if different movements come up in them, that doesn't destroy their connection with the self, with the clear space of good feeling. I have to say hello to everybody watching on the internet in the United States, New York and Ann Arbor, in Canada, in Ganeshpuri, in Japan, and in Portugal, and then all around Australia. We have watching in Adelaide and in Brisbane, and in Brisbane, all over Brisbane they're watching, in the Blue Mountains, in Byron Bay, and even in Mount Eliza they're watching. And also on the Sunshine Coast, hello. So I won't mention any names tonight, but I'll just say hello. But you know who you are. So tonight, celebrating the teachings of one of our rotation of great beings, this is a man that I met on one occasion on one of my trips to Bombay, which is now Mumbai. And it is this chap. Ferocious, isn't he? This is Nisargadatta Maharaj, and very interesting. At the same time that Baba was teaching in Ganeshpuri, 50 miles into the countryside, Nisargadatta Maharaj was teaching in his apartment in the city, a very humble part of the city, and he was also plying his trade. He didn't run an ashram. He was a householder. He was a businessman. He was in the business of getting people sick. He sold cigarettes. He was an entrepreneur. But he was a real spiritual seeker. Let us see what else you have. This is a wild look in his eye, isn't it? Every night he would have a gathering in his little hall, some little satsang hall. And people would be jammed in there, and they'd ask him questions, and he would, very fiery and argumentative he was, and he would talk about the self to them. So there he is in full action there. And what else? We have one more? There he is, all dressed up for church. So I met him, I came in, we used to go to Bombay every once in a while just to get away, have a milkshake, and so on. And so one time we heard about the saint that lived there and went and visited him, and it was a really good experience. We had no translator, but we spoke a universal language. He was very welcoming and sweet. Later I found out that he was had an iron understanding, and he was a jnani, a man of knowledge. His path was wisdom, and he had a clarity, extraordinary clarity. So this is a dialogue with Nisargadatta Maharaj. So this is from March 7th, 1981. And he, I think he died in late 1981. Does anybody know for sure? He died very, around the same time as Baba. The world lost some great beings right around that time. Anandamayi Ma, Baba, and Nisargadatta all died within a year of each other. And, yeah. What's that? Venkateshananda, what year did he die?
He went
around the same time.
2 months before or after Baba.
Yeah. He was a dear friend of mine. He was very helpful to me, yeah. Another great being. And then, you know, similar to 1950, when Aurobindo and Ramana Maharshi and somebody else who I can't remember. So, anyway. This is a dialogue with Nisargadatta. As I said, he had a little house in part of Bombay, and he was upstairs on the second floor. He lived on the next floor, and then one more flight above that, he had this little hall. And every night, his friends would come in and people, and word got out because one of the books of dialogues became very famous, called "I Am That." And pretty soon he was known around the world, and people would flock. And so this was from one of those sessions. Questioner, I've been coming here for several weeks, and I really enjoy your dialogues and your answers. I seem to be getting something from it, but lately a doubt has arisen. I want to ask you for your advice. How can I get the most benefit from my visits to your gatherings? It's a good question, no? Maharaj says, that's a good question. Everyone should ask themselves, how can I take advantage of this opportunity? These discussions are not common. They are rare. There is value to be gotten from them. You know, I remember when I got to Ganeshpur and I was with Baba, and I was struck, occasionally it would dawn on me, I'd say, how did I get so lucky? How did that happen that I couldn't account for it? I left the United States wanting to find the guru. I had no names and addresses. I knew that I was going to hit this big country of India and just go there and I would find the guru somewhere. And it all happened like very smoothly, much more smoothly than I had any right to ever expect. But I just knew it was going to. Weird. And then I was in this ashram, which was beautiful from every point of view, full of energy, shakti, and so on purpose. And it was so completely honed so that you could grow and fry. You grow through frying. I say, how did I get so lucky as to find this place where this could happen? So it's a great opportunity that we have. And then sometimes if you don't take that opportunity, you look back and you're really upset with yourself. And there are people who are given that opportunity, they don't grab that opportunity. And some of them just throw it away like it's nothing. So Maharaj says, there's value to be gotten from them. He says, a person approaches a guru with a sense of love and regard. That person will benefit to the extent of how he perceives the guru. If he sees him as a mere individual, that will be the extent of his benefits. If he sees him as the guru, that will be the further measure of his benefits. So I was having a little conversation with Bernard before dinner. Was it before dinner or after dinner? Whenever it was. And I was talking about this notion that haunts me all the time, that we have these two narratives within us. The story of the ego and the story of the self. And the story of the ego is the one that we know intimately. I get this, I get that, I don't get this, I don't get that, all my dramas and all that. But the story of the self is hidden. It's deeper down, and we only come in touch with it through meeting a great being or through doing some spiritual practice, through meditation, through self-inquiry. And this is reflected in our attitude towards the guru, because the guru also is both a person and a connection to this deep place. And Baba would say that the higher you saw, you see the guru, the greater your attainment. And if you see him as a flawed person, you'll be able to do that. But if you see him that way, then you won't get the value. You won't get the highest value from him. So that's what Maharaj is saying. He says the real state of the guru is that state which was prior to the birth of the mind. We can say the mind represents the mundane, the ego's narrative, and the self represents the higher narratives. That makes sense to you? And so we become the mind, we believe the mind tells us all our stories and dramas. He says very few will have reached that state. Most of you will not want to go beyond identification with an entity or a body. That's harsh, he's telling people. Most of you don't want to go beyond that. Your personal identification has been changing from your infancy till now. Take that. Is that true for you? Who am I? Who am I? And which will continue to change in the future. Exactly. It is purely temporary and conditional. You identify with the body on the strength of hearsay. So this is interesting. Your parents told you that you were born on a certain date and that this body is what you are. You believe you were born on the birthday you celebrate, but you don't know that. You might even have a document, but it could have been all forged. This could be what is it? Westworld. Who knows what's going on here? What? Yeah, we don't know. So based on hearsay, you formed your identity with a certain image. Sometimes it happens that a seeker begins to believe they understand themselves very well. Maybe the seeker thinks, now I've become a jnani. Now I've attained. Maybe so, but sometimes it can be a cause of self-deception. A person might identify with an image of himself which is nothing but a concept. So most of it's on the mental plane. Most of our persona is on a mental, emotional plane. And here's what it is teaching. Maharaj says, just understand what you are and be simple. Be what you are. Be what you are. Carry on your daily life to the best of your ability. See, that's a great koan. Be what you are. The kind of thing you should mull over again and again. Be what you are, not a creation of your mind, not a persona that you create for other people's, to impress other people, but simply be what you are. Question. My daily life is full of suffering. That's the problem. I just can't carry on my daily life and be in bliss. Haven't I suffered enough? We join him in that cry? Haven't I suffered enough? Maharaj, suffering has made you dull. Your first task is to see the sorrow in you and around you. Your next task is to long intensely for liberation. Interesting, too. You could say that's part of Shiva process. The first task is to make the A statement, which is to just be aware of present feeling. Be aware of what our situation is. And then the second task, which would be the G statement, which would move towards the higher self. Move towards, with an intense longing for liberation, this state of possibility that we're told about, that's possible, that we've glimpsed. He says, the very intensity of longing will guide you. You need no other guide. Just the desire for liberation. In fact, Shankaracharya, the great Vedantin, said that there are four things that a seeker needs. First one is mumukshutva, which is the longing for liberation. If you don't want to become the best person, the greatest person, the true person, if you don't want to be the true, your true self, nobody's going to convince you to do it. Nothing in the world can make you do it. But once you get the bug, nothing in the world can stop you from doing it because you realize that that's the most important thing in life. But it's not something that you can convince somebody of. So he says, the questioner says, you're right. Suffering has made me dull, indifferent even to suffering itself. The Maharaj has a way, never will agree with anybody. Some gurus are very agreeable, you know, oh yes, that's good. But Maharaj, no, whatever you say, he contradicts. That's his method. I always find it amusing. He says, so the guy is conciliatory. You're right, suffering's made me dull. Maharaj, maybe it's not sorrow, but pleasure that's made you dull. Investigate. I think that's the real message. So you're just saying that, you're just thinking that. Look inside and see what's real. Investigate. Question, well, whatever may be the cause, I am dull. I have neither the will nor the energy. Is Maharaj going to agree? Yes, you're a dull person with no will. Maharaj says, oh no! You have enough for the first step. This is also very interesting thinking. And each step will generate enough energy for the next. A lot of times, you know, you say, I can't go on because you think I've got to get to the top of Mount Everest. And here I am on the valley, you know, in the valley somewhere. How am I going to do that? But just get to the next step. And then you get the energy for the next step. Really interesting. Energy comes with confidence. And confidence comes with experience. The guru points you to the road and you come to realize that the road itself is the goal. The guru points you to the path to the self. And being on that path is it. It's enough. You don't have to worry about getting to the end of it. If you're walking the path, that's enough. The thing is, we jump off the path. We don't stay on the path. But to walk that path, and then everything we need will come. It's like the Camino they would take, you know. You just keep walking. You're always on the road, not to reach a final goal, but to walk that road with awareness and intelligence. Then life ceases to be a task and becomes natural and simple, simple in itself in ecstasy. Question. So there's no need to worship, to pray, and to practice yoga? Looking for a loophole. Maharaj's attitude here is very funny too. Maharaj says, a little of daily cleaning, washing, and bathing can do no harm. So, you know, it's like the analogy there. That when you meditate, when you do inquiry, you do practice, it sharpens you, it sharpens the instrument. It cleans up the instrument, gets rid of dullness. So what harm is there in doing it? It's very good for you. He says, self-awareness tells you at every step what needs to be done. When all is done, the mind remains quiet. So you don't have to have a particular position, that at each moment, the information comes to you, what you need to do. I need to do japa, I need to say the mantra. the information will come within. If, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to visit the ashram, that information will come to you. Maharaj says, now you see yourself as a person with name and form, joys and sorrows. Instead of struggling with the person to make it become something else, why not identify with the highest and leave the personal life altogether? So he's saying, grasp the higher narrative. He says, it does not mean the extinction of the person. It means only seeing it in the right perspective. So it doesn't mean that the ego is obliterated and you're no longer, John Smith from Mount Martha. You're still that, but also you've connected to a higher source, which is full of energy and full of love and full of delight. And a dilemma that I had early in my stay with Baba. The real turning point in me was asking him about that. I asked him about the ego, and he said, don't worry about the ego. He said, just connect the ego with the self. Say, I am the self. I am Shiva. I am the self. Always say, I am the self. So always connect your narration with the higher. Then the two narratives merge and become the same narrative. Question, one more question. You say that before we were born, we were one with the pure being of reality. If that's true, who decided we should be born? You remember deciding to be born? Any of you? Maharaj says, my guru told me that I was never born and I will never die. That was his teachings. The guru said, you are not this person that is born and dies, you are the self. Now you're making the assumption that you have a body and you ask me what has brought about this state. From the point of view of limitation, from the personal point of view, the answer is desire born from memory attracts you to a body. It makes you think you are one with it. What is that saying? It's saying we get, it's within the context of reincarnation. It says you get reborn because of desire. You want to fulfill certain things, so you get born in a suitable birth to discharge those karmas. That makes sense? So that's from the mundane perspective, that's what it is. But he said, Maharaj said, but this is true only from the relative point of view. In fact, there's no body nor a world to contain it. There is only a mental condition, a dreamlike state, easy to dispel by questioning its reality, by self-inquiry, saying this is all a dream. You ever think this is a dream? Wouldn't it be nice if you woke up from this and be all right? Maybe your dream is a good one, so don't wake up. Question, after you die, I think he's blown the questioner's mind, so he's gone off on another tangent. Question, after you die, will you come again? If I live long enough, will I meet you again? What do you imagine that is? He must be going, maybe he's a European, he's going away back to Europe or somewhere. And I don't know. Oh, I know what it is. Maharaj was in his last throes of his illness. He had cancer and he died that year. And so he's worried. You know, I think that, let's imagine. This is imagining. It may not be accurate. But let's imagine that he's just discovered him. He says, oh my God, I just discovered you. I have so much to gain from you. And now you're going to die. What are you going to do? What am I going to do? Right? So he says, if I live long enough, will I meet you again in some other form? Maharaj says, to you the body is real. To me there is none. I, as you see me, exist in your imagination only. Surely you'll see me again, if and when you need me. Now here he's talking from the impersonal, from the guru principle, not the person, but my death will not affect me, just as the sun is not affected by sunrises and sunsets. The guru is certain to be there when needed. The guru is certain to be there when needed. You are bent on knowledge, I am not. I do not have that sense of insecurity that makes you crave to know. I am curious, like a child is curious, but there's no anxiety to make me seek refuge in knowledge. Therefore, I'm not concerned whether I shall be reborn or not, how long the world will last. Not. In other words, he's saying, I'm not interested in the personal drama. You are, but I'm not, he says. These are questions born of fear. But in truth, there's nothing to be afraid of. It is true that we're interested in all these things because we're worried about it. We're worried. So he's saying, I'm not interested because there's nothing to be afraid of. Another questioner says, do these conversations bring us closer to the goal of our yoga? I said, what? Are we just going on? Maharaj, all these discussions are an exchange of ideas and mental entertainment meant to while away the time. He's joking. Question, you're joking, aren't you? If you don't make some kind of effort, you get nowhere. Maharaj, no doubt you'll continue to do something, even if it is conceptual, but the one who understands that he's already there, what will he do? Question, okay, I see your point, but isn't there a tremendous scope for self-deception here? Can't a lazy person say, I'm already there, so all practice is useless? Surely there's such a thing as using one's will to do something. For example, one tries to stay awake saying a mantra or meditating and keeps pulling himself back from sleep. Isn't this a worthwhile thing to do? So there's some argument going on. He's saying, isn't spiritual practice good? And he's afraid Maharaj's saying, there's nothing, you can't practice. There's nothing to do. So Maharaj says, of course you're correct. At the stage of the seeker, one must make effort. And that effort is good and correct. But after a while, the seeker disappears in the seeking. When the seeker disappears, there's no question of doing. Your true nature is that which was before the body and before the individuality came into being. So what is it? It's consciousness, it's awareness that takes on a body and then matures in that body. First, it takes a long time to get used to the fact that it's in a body, and then the mind is educated, then it becomes an adult. He says, your true being cannot be seen or pointed at. It is the absolute self. All these actions belong to the relative self, even your practices. I'm not telling you anything that I've not experienced. It's very simple. Anything that is in time and space is not the true self. All these things are concepts that reside in the mind. Even time is nothing but a mental concept. If you can accept what I'm saying, accept it completely. Very few can do this at once. Most have to do some practice. And there's nothing wrong with that. Most everybody has to do some sadhana, except for Ramana Maharshi. You know, I can tell you how to be Ramana Maharshi. You want, should I tell you? Do sadhana for 20, 30 years. Suffer like hell, grow and so on, and be right on the point of self-realization. And then say, I want to die now so I can be reborn with just that to do next life. You're not going to do that. You'll say, let's get to the goal, right? So don't be envious of him. Most have to do some practice. From the highest point of view, spiritual practice is a doing of something which you cannot do at all. Nonetheless, paradoxically, you have to do it. So, you know, because they say, how can you reach the infinite by finite means? How can your little efforts reach that which is beyond form? You know, so obviously you can't do it. But obviously, you have to try. You have to work at it. Question. There is a constant restlessness in the mind, wanting to realize something. Is that an obstacle? Maharaj, Do you exist before the mind, or did you come into being after the mind? Question, I must be prior to the mind. Maharaj, there are two methods. You should pick the method that conforms to your nature. The first method is to purify the mind. Make it think good thoughts. Make it dwell in the light. Get rid of the darkness. This is one way. That's a good way, isn't it? Work on yourself. Make the mind where it goes negative, where you get despair, where you get anger, where you get frustration. Move it to the light. The other way is not to worry about the mind. You witness what happens, or even cancel whatever you experience through the mind as having no substance. This whole world is a mind play, and since you're not the mind, why be concerned? So what is that method? You don't pay attention. If you have a bad mood, doesn't matter. You're still Shiva. If you're feeling lousy, it doesn't matter. None of it matters. Very hard to do that. Question, I think I prefer the first method. The second method is too abstract. Maharaj, whichever one appeals to you. Real beingness is eternal, but relative beingness, the beingness of the individual, is temporary. Your body is the product of the food you eat. He often says, your body is just food. I started thinking about that. It's true. Just food. It's a trail of all your previous meals. The footprints, the mouth prints of your eating history. This body, which is nothing but food and water, is the fuel by which the ego is sustained. Presently, you're embroiled in being a limited individual, but you as the absolute are not this limited individual. Question, are you saying there's nothing in life that's worthwhile or can lead to the self? Maharaj, it's not like that. Ordinary life is worthwhile as long as you remember the self. That way you'll be detached from problems. You may have a toothache or stomach ache, but your focus will be on the self, the absolute. These issues will remain at the edge of your awareness only. Then joy will come through the center of your awareness. So what's the summary of it all? Always remember the self. Work for the self, strive for the self. Practice, remember the self, is what Maharaj is saying. So, let's meditate. Could be good, huh? The way to listen to Maharaj, I think, and to many of the great beings, is just not to strain like you're listening to a lecture on physics or history, where you're trying to grasp all the concepts and grasp all the details, but to let it jump out at you. Let the idea, if you get one idea from what you just heard that you can work with, look for ideas to work with, not memorizing a system, but just an idea that I can work with spiritually, internally. If you can get one idea from that, and then you've gotten more than enough from that. So that's the way to listen to Maharaj. Let's meditate for 10 minutes, okay? I'll lead a little bit of Shiva process at the beginning, a streamlined form, and then we'll meditate. So let's close our eyes and become present. And look within. We'll do a Nisargadatta Shiva process. And if you look within you, be aware of feelings, thoughts, energy. Be aware of the mood that you're in. Good mood or a bad mood. Be aware of sensations. Now someone somewhere hidden in all of that inner experience. It's a deeper experience, experience of joy, contentment, love, peace. That's deep down, underneath all the superficial chatter. This is what the sages say, this is what Nisargadatta says. This is what Baba said. Have some intuition of that place in you that's free and blissful. Reach out to it. Go deep in, see if you can connect with it to some extent. If you feel a movement, an upliftment, an energy, then you're getting closer to it. You relax into it. Tension is the enemy of knowing it. So relax, release your tension, let it go. Fear is the enemy of it, so let go of the fear. We'll meditate now for 10 minutes. Once again, with great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. Let's meditate.